and welcome to the beginning of Somewhere in Between Video Readings. I'm Eric Francis Compolino, shacking up with my video camera in Rosendale, New York, just a few miles away from where the first planet waves horoscope was ever written in the spring of 1995. I thought I would get out of my normal environment and the busyness of my office and home office and have a little new energy based on a different space to work in. So welcome. Thank you for being a customer of Somewhere in Between. My plan for these readings, first of all, is to take my time. I'm on a video camera that does not shut me down every 30 minutes, so I can go straight through. And as you're finding out, we're planning to release these as they are recorded. I spent about 6 weeks writing the written readings, and I am not referring back to the written readings to do the TV video readings here. So I want to take a fresh look at the chart. I'll give you an idea of the chart that I'm working with. I'm working with this kind of abbreviated version, kind of the essential notes version of what is in this chart, which is the All-American Eclipse, also known as the Aries New Moon, which takes place April 8th, 2024, if you're anywhere in southeastern Canada, northeastern United States, down on a diagonal through Texas and into Mexico. You will be in the path of totality of what promises to be a very lively and exciting eclipse of the sun. And I may start with, let's start with a query that I received from a customer of the Aries reading who wanted to know why it is that this Aries eclipse is of such importance, why it is I'm placing such emphasis on the eclipse. Now, it doesn't take much for an eclipse to be really meaningful. They almost always come with or at profound turning points in some way. And eclipses are fairly rare enough. Generally, you get two solar eclipses in a year, two lunar eclipses in a year. They're always on the move. They never occur in the same place, anywhere remotely near one another. Often, eclipses in the same location are separated by hundreds of years. And one of the things that makes eclipses so influential is that they're intersections of many different cycles. The lunar cycle, the solar cycle, the lunar nodal cycle, and then several different ways to measure eclipse cycles. And so to me, they are like intersections in space and time. They're nodal points. They're big junctions, places where many things intersect. And when one happens in Aries, you de facto, even though this one is going to be 19 and a half degrees away from the sidereal vernal point, you're still in Aries point country. And what Aries point country is, by that I mean that the first degree of Aries has a way of being an intersection of its own between the individual and the collective. This is Aries, and there's a similar property in Aquarius, but I think it's more pronounced in Aries. And I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about what's going on in Aquarius, your 11th place, where Pluto is arriving, and that is one of several different events I'm going to talk about. And by the way, before I get too far into the eclipse, hold the thought of the Aries eclipse being the confluence of many cycles at once intersection. I'm going to cover about four or five different events in the first part of this monologue, and then I will offer some ideas about a synthesis of what these things say when you bring them all together at this point in your life and at this point in space and time, where we are right now in history, somewhere we've never been before. I am talking to you on a day that has never been like this day, despite the occasional spectacular winter weather that we have here, this beautiful, bright, sunny, absolutely clear sky, dry air. Every day is a new day. That is one of the most important messages of astrology in general, is that every moment is a new moment. No two moments have the same astrology. No two moments are alike. And so this is an eclipse like no other. And one of the things that makes this eclipse an eclipse like no other is that it is exactly conjunct Chiron. Now, I'm going to show you how that looks in the chart for the new moon. The new moon and the eclipse are offset by a couple of minutes. It's a very bright skylight right above me. I'm not sure I can do this. This eclipse of the sun, the new moon, is conjunct Chiron. Chiron has been in Aries since early 2018, and then it moved back and forth and then settled into Aries in early 2019. So there was a one-year transition. There often is. And this has been era-defining for you. This has had a lot to say about the different times in your life. And it would be worth going through the major transits of Chiron through the cardinal signs. For example, the mid-1990s, very important. Late 1980s, very, very important. 2002 through 2005, very important. Those times, check those times out in your life. That is when Chiron passed through cardinal sign and made aspects to either your ascendant or your sun in Aries and all the things you have in Aries. And even though Chiron has been in Aries for a long time, we're now in something like the 18, 19, 20, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7th calendar year where Chiron has had an influence on Aries, that's me fiddling with my camera until I have confidence. I've been working on building confidence in this camera for a while. I'm not totally there yet, but I'm mostly there yet. Okay, so even though the transit's gone on for about 6 years, there are peak moments in these outer planet transits. There are times when the existence of the planet and the sign just really is pronounced. And that includes when there is a total eclipse of the sun conjunct the planet. And by conjunct, I mean that when you cast a chart for the new moon using the new moon search feature in any astrology program, you come out with the moon at 1924 Aries, the sun at 1924 Aries, and Chiron at 1924 Aries. I look at that and I think, how is that even possible? That the moon and the sun align exactly in an eclipse to the arc minute, to a comet flying around in space, out as far as the planet Uranus, very far from Earth, but they all line up exactly right. This is the kind of thing that happens like once, once in forever. I could use the program Solar Fire and try to find another iteration of it. It's not going to be any time in the time range that Solar Fire covers. Plus, the ephemeris of Chiron's only good back to about 1300, according to the Dieter Cook. All right. So we have this outstanding event that's going to highlight all the themes of Chiron in your sign. And the themes of Chiron in your sign, you might say, represent the crisis of personhood, the critical turning point moment where self-actuation becomes possible. Now, we don't have this concept in modern psychological language, self-actuation. In modern psychology now is into trauma and being a victim and depression and ADHD, suicidal ideation, all various versions of neurosis and psychosis. No one's talking about self-actuation. No one's talking about this mysterious process by which humans go from being, we're going to put in the sunlight here, what they are in the huge skylight up there. I was worried this place wouldn't have enough light. And this is one of the best designed buildings I've ever been in. It's a little 1,000-square-foot cottage. It's friggin' incredible. We don't talk about self-actuation. We don't talk about human potential, the beauty of what it means to become who you are in potential, to make that potential real. We're not on about this at this point. But that's the essence of Chiron in Aries. The essence of Chiron in Aries is the activation of human potential and of your personal potential. And here we're having a peak moment with the primary feminine archetype, the moon, the primary masculine archetype, the sun, lining up with Chiron in a way that you might say celebrates the integration of opposites, that celebrates the bringing together in this very unusual event the internal connections that have the potential to awaken or to represent a time of awakening. So where astrology intervenes is astrology says, there's some hidden treasure there. There's some hidden treasure there. Look there for the treasure. That's the gift of astrology. It's not that the astrology is causing things. It's that it's when read by someone who can actually read, astrology is saying, here's the possibility that you may be looking for. Here's the thing you're on the quest for. And for a lot of people, when we take away all the language of trauma and abuse and depression and ADHD and all these things that we're basically conditioned to ruminate over constantly, you have a healing process, hopefully, underneath there. And so different people are going to respond to this transit, this expression, in different ways. In the end, they all are leading to the same place. They all are leading to a place of wholeness and of healing. Now, the challenge that we are all facing, and this is a challenge that is not articulated, not enough, and not by people who have additional spiritual tools to be able to speak to the nature of a possible solution, but the Chiron solar eclipse on April 8th speaks to the nature of a potential solution. But this whole drama of our lives right now is being played out in the digital realm. It is not merely that I am coming to you by way of the digital realm. I set my intentions as an agent of healing and wholeness. But that is not the dominant message of the medium of the digital epoch that we are in. As the federal copyright law says, we are in the digital millennium. They knew that. And so here we are in the digital millennium, the first 24 years of the digital millennium, and we're not understanding the divisive and inwardly divisive nature of the digital realm, the way in which it fragments people, the way in which it divides people against themselves and creates environments where there is no, not only there's no sense of inner wholeness, but there is no sense of inner anything. I'm going to keep moving this. The sun is actually, what am I doing here? This, as you can see, I have a little overabundance of sunlight in a thing that I can't, how do I get out of this? Okay. In a thing that I can't really, there's no way to close that window. So now we're back to looking at my portable investigative office. I was trying to have the view be out the window. Please forgive me. And we're not going to edit these videos, so you just get to be with me here. In another place and time, we'd be sitting in the same room having this conversation. But that's not the way things are now. The way things are now is that everything pretty much happens by way of the digital realm and is expressed through technology. And we're not adequately aware of the extent to which this is splitting us apart. It is dividing us up. It is making it very difficult for us to be whole beings. The sun keeps getting brighter. I gotta get a hold of that lighting technician. And okay, now we're getting, now it's gonna look a little weird. We're getting some lens flare in there. All right, so this is better. I know I probably look a little bit morphy. And so Chiron, the eclipse conjunct Chiron, is going to push this for you and for everyone. And there's a relationship between the you and the everyone. And the relationship is through Aries, which connects you to everyone. It is one of the things that makes you who you are, is your sense of connection to the world and the people around you, and your personal understanding that you are not a being split apart within yourself or split apart from the outer world. But the digital onslaught, it's a combination of onslaught and creeping, rising tide of the digital thing. Ooh, it's a cell phone. Ooh, it's a better cell phone. Ooh, it's a computer that does that. Oh, it's a computer that does absolutely anything. Has crept up on us over the past quarter century or more, depending on when you jumped in. And it's been rising, the tide's been rising really for quite a bit longer than that. This is shown by the timing of this what Grandpa Marshall McLuhan, I just call him Grandpa for now, talks about is the retribalization of humanity. The retribalization of humanity begins largely under radio conditions, which converts society into tribes and begins to eviscerate the concept not only of privacy but of the inner private being. The sense of oneself having nothing to do with anyone else. A thing that emerged over long eons, the private interior space, the private space of consciousness. I'm dipping into a book that I found called, I think, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. A very famous book that someone reminded me existed. And he's saying this problem, in his view, the author, and I don't have the book handy, so I don't have his name in my mind, goes back to the beginnings of consciousness itself, and certainly as long as there's been recorded history of consciousness. And so for the past 100 years or so, we've experienced something profoundly destabilizing, which is this electrical elimination of the interior being, you, within yourself. And this has increased, the speed of this has increased radically under digital conditions, where all facets of our private lives are now housed in databases. The databases are accessible to a great many people. We spend a lot of our time revealing private things about ourselves. And the loss has been a spiritual loss, a loss of easy internal access. Now, how easy is easy? Well, people have been lunks as well. They don't necessarily use their inward seeking clairvoyance, you might say, your ability to read your own mind. This is not a very common thing. It's not very popular to actually know and understand yourself. Self-knowledge is a dangerous thing, as Lou Reed reminded us. So there's another thing in this eclipse chart that I haven't, I don't think I've brought this up in any of the somewhere in between readings, and that is this conjunction of Mercury. Oh, can we see that? How do I do that? Mercury, see right there? Mercury is conjunct Eris. Very close. Is Mercury retrograde? Yeah. The next Mercury retrograde will be conjunct Eris at the time of this eclipse. And that, to me, is a profound metaphor for seeking your wholeness, for seeking contact and communication with your inner... I must have mentioned this in the Aries written reading. If not, here we are. The retrograde Mercury summons you inward. That's the nature of the retrograde. It also summons you toward reconciliation with the past. It in Aries summons you toward reconciliation with yourself. Retrogrades are much more private than direct. Retrograde planets are more private and interior. They show what we tend to conceal from people for a diversity of reasons, but they also point consciousness inward. And consciousness is being pointed inward toward right exactly at the moment of the eclipse. This is mind-boggling. Exact to 3 arc minutes, 1/20th of a degree. This is crazy. I don't even know how this is possible. Aligning Mercury with Eris, saying, this is the situation. This is your state of mind and what to do about it. Digging me? All right. So that's why this eclipse in Aries is so important, but it's much, much more personally significant for you with Aries, Sun, Moon, or Rising. And would count also if you have, for example, if you're Libra Sun or Rising, it's happening right on the, you're looking right at it in the seventh solar place or seventh place. Okay, so that's really the major event. Let's talk a little bit about Pluto going into Aquarius. So Pluto going into Aquarius, the beauty of Pluto going into Aquarius is it has a very Aries-like nature. It is about the relationship of the individual to the collective. This will manifest many different ways. What I didn't mention about Aries, and I'll mention it now because it's a point of contact with this. I was so worried I wouldn't have any light in this room. The movement of Eris through Aries since 1922 has represented this almost like denaturing of human consciousness. This denaturing of individuation. Now you think, well, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, there was a lot of individuation, and I agree there was kind of a flourishing of the idea and the necessity for individuation. But a few things happened. One of them is that there was a tribal endorsement of that. There was a tribal quality to that individuation. And the other thing is that very soon after, you know, this human potential movement got some traction in the 60s and 70s, digital technology became very powerful. Operating behind the scenes, I'm always interested to see what a phone bill looked like in 1950s. Has anyone saved a phone bill from 1950? But very, very early in to the 1960s, 70s, everything's starting to be generated by computers. Records are being kept by computers. Or slowly, the digitization of society is being formed, and I think that this has finds its symbolic representation in Eris and Aries. Let's jump to Aquarius. Aquarius is another scene of the digitization of society. So Aquarius in previous eras represented groups, and some level it still does. It represents groups, organizations, circles of friends, And now all of those things have been taken over by digital conditions. You may think, well, but that's just how we do things. Well, what's wrong with Facebook? Well, the problem is that all of our relationships are partially processed by algorithm. They're processed by computer. The things we say about each other, the things we feel about each other, the things that we share with each other, the memories that we have in the form of photographs, all of these things are being indexed, databased, scanned, turned into facial recognition algorithms, such that the private self is gone, and the private self has been kind of digitized into the realm of Aquarius, which is one of the, you might say that's the technical side of the scene of this spiritual crisis, that all of our social networks, all of our contact with our relatives and loved ones are being housed in databases. It's crazy. And there is an evisceration of the private self, which is now moved from Aries into Aquarius in this kind of Borg. Basically, we're being swallowed by the Borg. Now, the question that I have been asking for years, and the fundamental question of somewhere in between, and these readings, and the eclipse, and Pluto, and Aquarius, and all this other stuff going on, is how do those who are interested in recognizing and preserving our humanity do so under these conditions? We're so little favors doing that. This is the fundamental spiritual question of our day. It is by far the most important spiritual question, the preserving of our humanity. And I admit that there are a few good few people who are not that interested in their humanity, or they don't think about it. It's always like Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, right? But you know that you're a human. You know that the incredible lengths to which you went to get here, to be here, to endure millennia of reincarnation and passing through all these astral realms to be here now. You know how important this lifetime is. And now these aspects are, I'm kind of jumping to synthesis, but let's go. These aspects are all asking the same question, or blaring the same message, or tapping you on the shoulder in the same basic way, which is to say, how are you going to preserve your humanity under these conditions? And the thing with humanity is it's being sold out in small chunks. It's being sold out a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit over time. Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, now you can't do that. Oh, now that's the newest thing that's illegal. And one of the things I'm here to say to you is that there is part of you, perhaps lots of you, by which I mean like a portion of your awareness, that remembers your humanity. And I'm suggesting that you listen to that part of your being all the time right now. Because if you don't, the last thing you're likely to hear is that facet of your humanity saying, I wish I had listened earlier, as the last gasp before drowning into this vast digitized collective. And it will take work to preserve humanity. It will take play to preserve humanity. It will take being an artist to preserve your humanity. And by artist, I mean, somebody with your, antennas up, paying attention to what's going on around you, probing into your environment. When you think of a probe, think of the insect, the antennas of an insect, or the whiskers of a cat. Pluto's going into your 11th place. That's Aquarius. So Aries has what some... I'm looking for a tissue somewhere. I had one a second ago. I have no idea where it went because my nose is itchy, and that's... And you can't pause video. So I'm going to get up and get a... if you'll excuse me for 1 second. Ah, it's right here. The last thing most people want to do is be sensitive in this environment, because the environment is so unfriendly to sensitivity, because there is so much pain. There is so much exhaustion from overstimulus that it seems like the last thing you want to do is invite openness to stimulation. Invite openness to what you may be feeling inwardly. But I'm here to tell you that that is the most important thing that you can do, the most important thing that you can structure into your life in order to keep your humanity alive, and to remain, as a consequence of that, humane. So, lurking in the background of somewhere in between readings, used very judiciously and minimally, is this. The first book ever written about Pluto, written in 1934, just 4 years after the discovery, probably less, because he was working on it, took time to publish it, 4 years after the discovery of Pluto in 1930. And it was translated into English by the American Federation of Astrologers, who at the time had an office in Washington, D.C. If you can imagine, the American Federation of Astrologers had an office in Washington, D.C. That's how much self-esteem they had. And Fritz Brunhubner. Hi, Fritz. Pretty good book. Offers a little commentary on Pluto in the 11th house. It's talking about the natal position, but Pluto takes 20 years to go through Aquarius. 20 years. We're beginning a 20-year era in history. And he writes... I'm going to look down for this. Pluto in the 11th, especially if in aspect with Venus or Jupiter, gives great love towards one's fellow men and willingness for sacrifice. It produces real friends of humanity and ministers. I've often found Pluto in the 11th horoscope for priests and physicians. This position of Pluto is found in charts of people who spread happiness around themselves and who bring joy and progress to their surroundings through their personal characteristics. These are the artists of life, the idealists, the leaders who fight with enthusiasm for an ideal, who often bring new teaching for the good and benefit of all. Reformers, people who have something to give humanity. These types, therefore, almost always have many friends and admirers or followers of their ideas and enjoy great popularity and attraction. Sometimes there is an occurrence of peculiar, many-sided, potentially unhappy connections, also such as are of an emotional nature. So, what he's saying is that the dominant quality, the dominant quality of Pluto in the 11th is a humanitarian streak. And Aquarius does have some of that. Most of what we're experiencing right now is the shadow side of Aquarius, where we're experiencing the side of Aquarius that is about social control. We're experiencing the side of Aquarius that is about this submission to control by digital conditions. And it's not very friendly. The evolution of the world into the global village. Grandpa notes that villages are not friendly places. Small villages are generally not very friendly places. They turn incredibly hostile at times, and that hostility you must pay attention to that and know who everyone is around you. Pluto is always a disruptive force. It is going to shake up whatever has crystallized into this digital social pattern of Aquarius. So one thing you can expect is some form of a shift or shakeup in your social circle, in the organizations you take part of, in your online life. I think there's going to be some... there'll be a couple of internet disasters under Pluto and Aquarius, particularly at the beginning. Not that the whole ongoing situation on the internet is not a disaster. In all of the losses of privacy, humanity, and personal, the personal nature of being human. Okay, so we've considered the eclipse in your house. We've considered Pluto entering Aquarius. The written readings will have much more to add to this. Let's go to Taurus. Big events in Taurus happening have been happening, but this is another one of those situations where there's been a transit that's been going on for about 6 years. That would be Uranus in Taurus. And you think, well, what's new about that? Well, what's new about that is it is going to take a transit from Jupiter. And this happens only about 12 days after the eclipse. So in essence, the eclipse in Aries and the conjunction of Uranus and Jupiter in Taurus are so close together that we're likely to experience them as being part of the same process. And Taurus is very close to your sign, or to your ascendant or your moon. And Taurus is in many ways a direct extension of Aries, in that it is the second place of Aries, and the second place follows the first place, and the second place's extension is the extension in the realm of values and in the realm of the value one places on oneself. One of my favorite passages from A Course in Miracles, we'll see if I can remember it, is every decision you make stems from what you think you are. Essentially. And if you think that you are little, you will make little decisions with little outcomes. And if you have a sense of your own meaning, purpose, beauty, grandeur, sense of belonging on the planet, the sense of the worthiness of your experience on Earth, you will make decisions that emerge from that state of worthiness. That's what this astrology is about. So, let's see. First of all, it's fabulous to have Taurus as your second place. Taurus tends to be stable. It tends to be resourceful. It tends to have a sense of priorities and values, whatever those may be. Whatever is attached to Taurus is going to come with a real sense of one's values and priorities. And you have access to those things. The strange thing about putting Uranus there, and it must be even stranger for people born under the sign Taurus, is that it creates a shakeup of all that was previously experienced as stable. It creates radical, rapid, and sometimes irreversible change in a part of your awareness, your life, your consciousness, meaning your chart, where you were used to things being dependable. depending on whether you follow astrology and whether you believe that the solar chart means anything, which is the chart that we're reading here, the chart of the sign, not the person, you may not have given this a name, but let's give it a name. And that name might be some form of radical transformation, radical reevaluation of your sense of purpose, meaning, and worth. Uranus is radical no matter what you do with it. And it is going to make unexpected, precipitous changes. So there may have been vast, unexpected, precipitous changes. For example, in your financial life and the value of your assets. And I think more than anything, in your sense of who you are. Jupiter arrived last year. It's been there so long, it's right at the end. We've been saving the best for last. Jupiter spends about a year in every sign. 12-year orbit around the sun, which is flat. What we're getting is this last incredible, spectacular hurrah of Jupiter and Taurus. And really, this is the big hurrah of Uranus and Taurus also. It's a conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus. This has a way of... this conjunction, it happens every 13 years... and you can hardly say anything bad about it, especially in Taurus, where Jupiter is so well situated. And this is a radical expansion of your potential, of your sense of your own worth, your value, and your talent. It can point to the possibility of money manifesting or coming in. I do not propose that you should speculate based on astrological concepts. Uranus can taketh away as much as it can giveth, except that Jupiter is about abundance. Jupiter is about boons and windfalls and expansions of things. So this will work whether you place heavy bets or not. But I think that the thing that we could use the most of as a resource or an asset, because it leads to every other resource and every other asset, is a sense of your own worthiness, a sense of your own the value of your own truth. Now, establishing the value of your own truth is a lifelong process, and that lifelong process is very closely associated with, if not the exact same thing, as self-actualization. But here we are. Here we are. And this is going to happen in, not conjunction, because that's a word in astrology, but synchronously with this eclipse in April. It's April 8th is the eclipse, April 20th is Uranus conjunct Jupiter. So I don't know how to give a better... self-motivational pep talk. I can maybe channel my inner Anthony Robbins and buy this place. but pay attention to who you are. Celebrate the beauty of what you feel and what you do, and invest your time and your energy in that which you know matters. Right, there are things that just don't matter, and there are things that matter. And I'm suggesting that you do a careful evaluation of what you know makes a difference to yourself and the world, and put your love, your time, your value, your energy, and all your resources right there. When Jupiter finishes its conjunction to Uranus, about a month later, it enters Gemini. So it's going to move from the... Let's see if this works at all. I'm going to put the monitor back. The monitor keeps going off on this camera. It's like times out in 5 minutes, and then I can't see what I'm doing. So here's the event in Taurus. Here's your sign. There's the eclipse. Oh, TSE, conjunct Chiron. That's how I notate it. And then Jupiter conjunct Uranus. By the way, before I go on to Gemini, You may have heard me talk about 1992 QB1. Maybe you heard me talk about it many times. That was finally given a name by its discoverers. The name is Albion from Blake. It stayed 1992 QB1 for... It was discovered in 92. It was probably named in 2021. It may hold the record for a planet with the... It maintained its provisional name the longest before the discoverers, not especially egocentric people, Dr. Liu, Dr. Jewett, very mellow types, a Brit and a Vietnamese American. So that they're not making a public relations effort in their astronomy, but they named it finally, and they named it Albion. And Albion is a figure from Blake, and as I read the passage from Blake that Dave Jewett used to describe this, it seems like a statement of the potential, the most beautiful potential of humanity. And I would remind you that the most beautiful potential of humanity is always going to have something to do with consciousness. It's always going to have something to do with our awareness. Let's talk about that awareness. Jupiter moves into Gemini in May. In April, something else moves into Gemini. Gemini is your third place, your third solar house. That is your basic sentient waking mind, and it's also your local community, as opposed to something larger, which is the 11th house, right, where Pluto's going to be, Aquarius for you. That's a bit larger community than the third. The third is your immediate local community. It's the place where you know everyone's name. You know the merchants that you shop from. I consider the third house to be any place where you know the name of the merchant that you're buying things from. You expand that to the third house because it has a personal nature. And for you, this is Gemini. This is a very handy house to have on the third place, because it makes you want to be close to your community. It necessitates being close to your community. You're not made for all this online buy from anonymous people bullshit. And look, there's some very nice ones. I prefer to correspond with them by email and call them up on the phone when I can. This is my first time in an Airbnb. Why I picked this one was all it's near my office and home, but I picked it because the owner got all these 5-star ratings. It's like being the greatest Airbnb owner in the world, caring for people, and housekeeper was here, helped me load in all my gear, and it was 5-star guy. That's my concept of business, and I would suggest that has something to do with It relates to Gemini on the third place, which you have, which is suggesting that you do business in this style. What is happening is not only that Jupiter's moving in, but this really strange, obscure planet orbiting our sun way beyond Pluto called Sedna, which you may have heard of. If you're an astrology fan, I've certainly mentioned it in many of the readings. I think I did Sedna through the signs for all 12. This thing has an 11,400 year orbit. It has not been in Gemini for 11,400 years. That's a long time. There's no human recorded record of what was going on 11,400 years ago. The very place I'm sitting was either under ice or under melt off, like a kind of 500 mile river going by. So it is about the environment. Now, this has been the people who have been sussing out Sedna in Taurus, which has been in since the 60s, have come out with a kind of environmental assessment of Sedna in Taurus. And I think that we'll carry that study of the environment forward into Gemini. But we move from the physical environment in Taurus to the mental environment in Gemini. This is crucial change. And the mental environment is the social environment because of the digital and the digital connection to Aquarius, the state of mind associated with groups. We're seeing a mirror of the same thing with Sedna in Gemini, but it is much closer to home for you. But they could be looked at as transits with very similar interpretations, Sedna in Gemini and Pluto in Aquarius. And this is calling you to be actively part of the local community in which you live, to get to know your neighbors, to do everything you can to shift your commerce to a local orientation rather than a global orientation, and to make sure that you are doing everything you can to participate locally. The third is also about your mental framework, is about your mental state of mind. It is the language you use. It is your style of communication. It is your it is the message that is conducted through what you write and what you say and what you transmit, and where you spend your money. And because Gemini is these kind of two mirrors looking into each other, the two twins that we all contain on some level, one of the messages of Gemini in the third house is to be mindful of your internal mental environment, your internal state of mind. What is the quality of your thought? What is the quality of your speech? And to notice these things and to make a kind of a yoga out of the quality of your thought and the quality of your speech. The third house very heavily favors writing as a means of spiritual growth and evolution. Writing serves many purposes. One of those is that you are able to commit your ideas to a tangible form, and therefore be able to experience them in some way. The other thing about writing is that you are able to see the progress that you're making with your ideas over a period of time in the revisions that you're making. And you can also record where you were in history at a certain point in the past, and then compare it to where you were today. And I highly recommend writing as a spiritual practice under the influence of Sedna in Gemini. Now, one of the gifts we're getting with this Sedna ingress to Gemini with Jupiter involved is, well, I think it's well worth asking what Sedna and Gemini is about, considering the last time it happened. You know, no, they weren't exactly dinosaurs walking around here, but it was very, very different when there was no Gemini at the time. Sedna was in Gemini, so what's this about? It was something completely new in the human story, and Jupiter is going to come along immediately, I think it's May 27th or something, and magnify and amplify, which is what Jupiter does, exactly what Sedna in Gemini is about. So you will get information about this. Okay, so we've covered houses 11, 1, 2, 3. There's a transit I'm not sure what to make of. I may have mentioned it in the Aries reading. I know that it's in my notes. It's in the outtakes, which I'm about to publish. I've got like 7,000 words that I cut. And it involves this, from time to time I mention these points. I'm going to put a little purple circle around it. And, don't be too confused by the purple line. There it is. Let's see, there in the purple circle there. I don't know if that's even visible. The light really is changing. This is like one of these days made for photographers. The light is changing like every 5 minutes. The light is completely different. This is really quite hilarious. I mean, you live for these I live for these moments when I'm out with my camera, because it's like, wow, I don't have to even go anywhere, and I get a whole new photo. All right, now it seems like I can actually face into the light and not, hi, I'm back. So let me break down what the planets are about themselves. The point I'm tracking, moving through Cancer, is one of these mysterious points without a body. It's called Trans-Neptunian Point, a TNP. It's from a branch of astrology that must be documented somewhere, but the old astrologers are sadly, you know, departing the planet, and it's not a very popular form of astrology. But the point's called Chronos, and it's been in Cancer probably since around 2000, I'm guessing. I've checked it before. I've got the ephemeris back in my office, but let's say about 20 years, more or less. And I think actually that's what it is. And it's going to be there for a long time. It's only halfway through. And this year, Cronus is about authority. It is about, depending on who you read, it's about authority, the highest authority. It is the very symbol of the VIP in astrology, which doesn't really exist in, with using the conventional planets. Not even the newly discovered planets really have a concept that represents the VIP, the very important person, the important personage. That's what it represents. It represents the most powerful representatives of government. It represents one's orientation on authority generally. And you have it in, we all have it in Cancer. It's been there again about 20 years. Moving through your fourth place, down way here on the bottom of the chart, right at the taproot of the chart. Well, there it is. So that's the fourth. And to me, this represents some kind of an internalized authority principle that looks a lot like the authority principle of the mother. And now, you know, I have to go out wearing a bulletproof vest every time I say something that's potentially unsavory about mothers. And I don't, worship the archetype of the mother. But the mother can be an extremely domineering, unwholesome force. Those of you who are mothers, I'm sure, wrestle with your wanting to treat your children perhaps better than you were treated, perhaps better than your mother was treated. I don't know for sure. I'm not a parent. I don't really spend a lot of time with that many people who are parents. But let's take that at least at the value at which I'm reading it. That there is a powerful internalized authority complex around Chronos. And it's very important to understand this for what it is, because that internalized authority complex is what external authority complexes graft onto, take over, and then try to run your life. And Chiron in Aries, in your sign, is making a series of squares to this point. A square is a 90-degree angle. It is the most powerful aspect. It is the most dynamic aspect. It is the most expressive aspect, because it simply must express itself in a way that releases something. And Chiron represents the very opposite principle of Chronos. Chiron represents the principle of rebellion, of individuality, individuation, of the necessity to really be who you are and go through what you need to go through. And these two are going to be what Patrick Walker would call clashing. And a square can be described as a clash. A square can be described as a conjunction in Uranian astrology. The point Chronos is from Uranian astrology, so the square can be a conjunction also. You look at it both ways. I think the bottom line of this combination is you must be your own authority. That is self-actualization. Relationships. What's going on with relationships? And I'll get to some career points also. Okay. Relationships for Aries are described in Libra. The way that looks is, here's Aries, and that's Libra. Let's see, move my finger off of the Libra symbol. That's Libra. So the general reading is self-other. I have a whole other theory that the houses work in a mirrored fashion. But let's use the 1-7 model. One being Aries, 7 being Libra. Early Libra has a permanent resonant in the form of a fixed point. It's a galaxy called M87. I don't know if it has another name, and it is a kind of a local galactic center. It is such a powerfully massive galaxy that it, I think, has a way of bending reality to it. And it's at 1.5 degrees of Libra. And it must be guarded as a kind of emotional black hole. So it's very important that you recognize who the people in your life are who in some way appear to be emotional black holes, who in any way are energy vampires. It's been this way since long before you were born. So, and you may figure this out. So you want to watch out for those black hole types. That said, the current most important, I believe, transit through Libra is a minor planet called Logos. I'm going to draw this in. So Logos is here. Logos is right there. I even wrote it in there. You can see it on the chart. This chart's going to be a little bit different than the one because I'm marking it as I go. And if anyone requests a rescanning of the charts, I will do it. Not if no one wants it. One person's enough. So and there's a point in early Aries called Shalatia. Now I don't dwell on this, but there's an important article that I wrote about Shalatia. So let's make the first addition to resources here. Let's get the Shalatia article up on your page, and possibly we make a resources page. Shalatia is about sexual appropriateness. By that I mean what's appropriate for you. We're accustomed to sex being basically bought and sold and transacted as being beholden to some set of external moral principles that don't work for anyone. Until they don't work for anyone because no one follows them. Or if they follow them, they're miserable. And they're essentially fictional, and they succeed very effectively at creating a hell of a lot of guilt and agony. That finds its answer in Shalatia. Shalatia says, do what is appropriate for you. Conduct yourself in the way that is appropriate for you. This is not something that most people do. It is what they think they do. But what most people are actually doing, in my experience, which is not meek or mild, what I witness most people doing is following some form of external pseudo-morality and then thinking that they're doing something that's in accord with their own internal values and attitudes. Shalatia says you must follow your own internal attitudes and values. Jupiter conjunct Uranus in the second house says follow your own internal attitudes and values. They're much more influential, powerful, and important than anyone else's attempt to influence you in any way. Okay. Shalatia is making a number of different aspects, and we get into it. This is kind of a this will be kind of a feat of chart integration here, because the individual bits of the chart are important, but it's only when you can look them up. And well, you can't look up Salacia in Aries, except if I wrote about it. But the old astrology books are always like, Mars in Aries means this, Mars in Taurus means this, Mars in Gemini means this. But the question is, what about Mars in Taurus square Uranus in, pick a fixed sign, Leo, et cetera, et cetera. That's interpretation. So now I'm going to try a little bit of that. Salacia in your first house is talking to something in your relationship house that is Logos in Libra. Logos in Libra, maybe I'm misguided. That's currently one of my favorite things in the entire sky, is Logos in Libra. It's been around for a while. It's not that far into Libra. Maybe it's about 8 degrees into Libra. So, you know, even if it takes a long time, it's only been a few years. Logos has, I think, a 295-year orbit. The combination of Logos in Libra and in Logos in Libra and Salacia in Aries is saying you must form the words to talk to your partners about what's right for you. Period. I am astonished at what people don't talk about. Mind blown. Regular basis on the secrets they keep from the people they consider the most intimate people in their lives. I am completely blown away by this. But part of that problem is that most people don't know what they even feel. They don't know what's actually really right for them. They don't know what is genuinely necessary for them. You can't talk about it unless you know. So I think there's a process of feeling out your personal truth through the conversations that you have with others. And not thinking this is a function of that one relationship, but making an effort to really understand your internal reality, your reality. And to make this work, you will need to be bold about admitting what is the right thing for you, right? Often it's fear that prevents people from saying, well, I'm really made to have two girlfriends or two boyfriends. I'm bisexual. Look, I love you and I love having sex with you, but I like having sex with people in relation to people of my own sex. Oh, well, that's interesting. That's meaningful. I don't and I think that, by the way, bisexuality and polyamory, I think, are two of the most obvious things that people need to talk about. A lot of bisexual and polyamorous people who are closet cases wearing rings, or they just stash it away for the purpose of their permanent monogamous relationship, it's not going to work. It's not going to bring fulfillment. And I think we at least need to be able to get to the point where we can talk about this with people we consider our intimate partners. Logos in Libra, opposite Salacia in Aries. Okay. Let's go to Capricorn. All of this connects to Capricorn, and I don't fully understand this conjunction. It's a quad conjunction in Capricorn going on right now. And if you see anyone else writing about this, I'll make you dinner. Come on over, or I'll come to your house and make you dinner. It's the conjunction of, if you want me to do that. Not everyone does. The conjunction of Pholus, second centaur, Quasar, very important outer planet, discovered in 2002. It was given number 50,000. You know the astronomers are saying this is important because they give it a number like 50,000. They say, we want everyone to remember this point, which sadly, Quasar. 50,000 Quasar. 50,000 numbered outer planet in our solar system, orbiting our sun. Now there's nearly a million, but number 50,000 in 2002 or 3 was Quasar. Then Ixion. Ixion is the potential in all people to do evil, and it's also representative of the squanderer of second chances. Squanderer of second chances. Write that on the mirror. Squanderer of second chances. You do not want to be the squanderer of second chances. Finally, Cupido. One of those crazy bodies, planets without a body. Which I love these things. So there you go. It's Pholus. This screen is kind of backwards, but it's Pholus. No, it's not. Pholus. Quasar. Ixion. Cupido. This is in an ancestral realm of the chart, but also a realm of the chart associated with power, Capricorn, 10th house authority. Here's the best I can offer with this conjunction, which is a lot of it's about ancestry, because both Pholus and Quasar are describe ancestry. And different forms of ancestry. Quasar goes all the way back to the beginning of the tribe. Pholus goes back to your great-grandparents. I think that the conjunction of Quasar and Pholus is saying, well, most of us think of our family and our family influences as going back as far as our great-grandparents. Some of us are fortunate enough to know our great-grandparents. But it goes back further. And I would say that this combination of influences is kind of like the taking the journey to the old country to find out what was there. Someone wrote to me recently. Well, I need to write back to her. The email's open on my screen. I've been busy. Is she went back to the old country of Italy, and she realized that the Italians in Rome were not like the Italian-Americans she grew up with in the United States, possibly in New York. Italian-Americans are a little pissed off and defensive, and there's a lot of mafia influence, which nobody really talks about. And we were heavily discriminated against, not as bad as African Americans, but there were lynchings of Sicilians and Italians in earlier times and 20th century. When she went back to Rome, she realized that the people in Rome are happy, they make eye contact, they stop and talk to little children. Completely different experience of Italian Americans in New York who are not always the friendliest people. I think that they're a little bit suspicious. I always try to stay on the good side of the Italians in my neighborhood. I'm like, I can always flash my full-blooded Sicilian identification card. My experience of going back to Sicily was completely the opposite of hers of going back to Rome. In Sicily, I entered the land of the perpetual grudge, the land where men and women don't speak to each other. Wow. I mentioned the last name of a relative, one of my bisnonni, on a bus, and an old man heard me say the name Nicastro and went, "Whoo! These people left in 1907. This guy's still angry at the name Nicastro, fucking century later." So the question is, going back beyond the facade of the family story back three generations. Well, what's really back there? Pull back that veneer. Do as much ancestral research as you can do. Understand, this is going to tell you a lot about how you respond to power and authority. This is the point of this. It's going to tell you a lot about the structure of your family. It's going to remind you that the ways of your family are not the be-all and end-all of human civilization. It's not always been this way. It's not always, you know, we always have a ham on Sundays. It's like, okay, well, you know, there are some people who have roast beef on Sunday. They're allowed to. This connects with the language of your relationships. It connects with your sense of sexual appropriateness. It connects with your sense of authority. And more than anything, it connects with your whether you feel safe taking action in the world. So there's a whole confluence of things that lead to this matter of whether you feel safe taking action in the world. And this is a year where, here's the synthesis part, where you will, I think, have the ability to do, call me back in a year and tell me if I was right, the most impressive development and emergence into your true self as you knew your true self to exist, deep within your thoughts, deep within your consciousness. I don't care how old you are, and I'm sorry that life is so short. It is like, it's too short for the amount of time it takes to learn how to fucking get a grip on the planet. I'm 60. I'm first feeling like, I've got a grip. Now, if I look back when I was 30, well, I wasn't doing so badly. But still, it's just like, and then, you know, it's usually over sometime between like 60 and 90. And that's not very long. But don't let that stop you from fully inhabiting and incarnating the person that you know that you truly are. Be that person. Learn how to be that person. Go through the struggle of what it takes to be that person. Embrace the learning that it takes. Embrace the challenging of ideas. Find the place that is the right place for you. Mostly I mean that mentally. And one of the paradoxes of consciousness is that you would think that thoughts are the most flexible thing in the world, right? I mean, they, you know, certainly more flexible than this, like, aircraft aluminum pencil. If I try to bend this pen, this ordinary nice pink pencil, I'd break it. This cup doesn't really flex. It, you know, eventually it'll be in pieces in a landfill. Today works fine. Why is thought so inflexible? So one of the if you put all these things together, where I come out is be flexible. I'm probably going to say this 12 times in 12 ways in the next 12 videos, 11 videos. Now one is almost done. Allow yourself the flexibility to grow, to change, and to become. Allow yourself the flexibility to say what matters to you, to your partners, and to hear what they have to say that matters to them. And if they don't tell you, they don't tell you. That's just how it is. You at least said your bit, and you get to respond to their response and decide if that's the right person for you to be with, if that person speaks your language. Logos, I may have said somewhere that logos is not the dream of a common language, as that's a phrase from one of my favorite poets, who sadly is not that friendly to men, but she's a heck of a poet. As Douglas Harper said, love the poetry, hate the politics. This is not about the dream of a common language, which is quite a beautiful poem, and it's about her struggle becoming a lesbian. It's about the actual fact of a common language, the truth of a common language, the reality of a common language. And you are looking at logos in Libra all the time, and your evaluation is, does this person speak my language? Do I speak their language? Can we communicate? Can we actually say something meaningful to one another? Go where you can. Go where you understand people. Go where they understand you. Don't think that you have to live in some form of isolation. With Pluto going into Aquarius, you're going to be a leader in your society. You're going to become a kind of a high-powered cosmic socialite. Can pick any form from party organizer, God, we could use a couple of those, to social activist, to social reformer, artist to social reformer. It's going to have, all these things are going to have a form of expression. That form of expression is going to come from something about who you are. The eclipse in Aries is the proving test of the expression of who you are. May you be that. From my heart to your ears to God's ears. All right, I think this is the first video of the Somewhere in Between video series recorded on Monday. I think today's the 15th of January 2015. Continues to be a little overcast. That's why I can face the skylight like that. And very nice here. No sirens have interrupted this video. Just a little sunshine. All right, that is what I have to say to you. And I thank you for your business, for your trust, for your willingness to hear these ideas and share these ideas. Share this video if you want. It's not blocked. It's just unpublished. You are free to share it. Encourage people to get involved if you found this at all to be helpful. And with that, I say bye for now, and I'll see you over at some other sign of the zodiac. Lots of love.